Hello everyone, good evening and welcome to an episode of Everyday Black History. Happy Thursday, the weekend is almost here. And as we cruise through this month of November and we're almost done with the year of 2020, although there's a lot of stuff, you know, still going on that we hear about in the news with the coronavirus and the election. You know, 2020 seemed like it's like the never-ending saga. But, you know, at least it's Thursday, and if you don't work on the weekends, the weekend is here, and hopefully you have some fun plans for the weekend, or maybe you're just going to rest and catch up on some time with the family, or just some personal, things you want to get done. Whatever it is, hopefully you have a good weekend plan ahead. But as we go through this month and this week, we just want to tell everybody, just, you know, keep your head up, because as we know, 2020 hasn't been easy for any of us. But today on Everyday Black History, we're going to be highlighting two women on today's episode, and from two completely different walks of life and career paths, and two completely different times as well. You know, the first woman we're going to highlight was a fashion designer. And she dressed all of the, you know, famous black celebrities such as Dorothy Dandridge, Nat King Cole, Eartha Kitt, just Ella Fitzgerald, Josephine Baker, just to name a few. And the second woman we're going to highlight was a pediatrician. And she is noted to be the fourth female African-American physician in the United States and the first female doctor who was able to practice medicine in the Dominican Republic. So as I mentioned, two, you know, different walks of life, two different time periods, but they their achievements are historical nonetheless. So the first woman we're going to highlight is a woman by the name of Zelda Wynne Valdez. And Zelda Wynne Valdez, born June 28, 1905, as mentioned, was a fashion designer and a costumer. And she is noted to be the creator of the original Playboy Bunny costume. And who knew that? I mean, I never knew that the concept came from the mind of the original concept, rather, came from the mind of a black woman. But she was born in, and she's born and grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. And when she was born as Zelda Christian Barber. She was trained as a classic pianist at the Catholic Conservatory of Music. And she got into tailoring in the early 1920s when she started to work in a tailoring shop with her uncle in White Plains, New York. Around this time, she began working as a stock girl at a high-end boutique, which gave her the ability to see what high-end fashion looked like at the time. And she worked her way up to selling and making alterations, where she became the shop's first black sales clerk and tailor. Now, she was quoted as saying that this wasn't a pleasant time for her, but the idea was to see what she can do. And as we know, there's a saying that goes, pioneering is always difficult. Whenever you're the first, as the first black person, especially of anything, or the first woman of anything, or the first person of color of anything, you usually have to deal with a lot of opposition and a lot of trials before your contributions are appreciated. And this was one step in the ladder of success for Zelda. Now, beginning in 1935, she had her own dressmaking business in White Plains, New York. And she eventually oversaw ladies' alterations and even developed her own dressmaking clientele. By the late 1940s, she opened Zelda Wynne, which is her design and dressmaking studio on Broadway, which is now called Washington Heights, or as we know here as Washington Heights on Broadway and West 158th Street. She said that her shop was the first black-owned business on Broadway, and she sold her dresses to Dorothy Dandridge, Gladys Knight. She also dressed the entire bridal party for the 1948 a wedding of Marie Ellington, who was Maria Cole, and that was the wife of Nat King Cole. Nat King Cole, for those of you who don't know, the famous singer, Natalie Cole's father. I mean, I'm sure you've, during Christmas time when they play all the Christmas songs, I'm sure you've heard songs by Nat King Cole. Beautiful voice. Very popular crooner back in the days. She dressed the whole bridal party, as mentioned, some of her celebrity clients included Josephine Baker, Mae West, Ella Fitzgerald, Eartha Kitt, and Marian Anderson. And these are all celebrities from the 1940s and the 1950s. So they may not be names that you know off the top of your head now, but if you look up Dorothy Dandridge, Josephine Baker, Ella Fitzgerald, you know, Eartha Kitt, these are all legends. Legends in music and film. And back in those days, when you were a star, you were like the triple threat. You danced, you sang, and you can act. So these were true celebrities that she was styling back in the 40s, 30s, and 40s and 50s. Her she was said to created an image for a woman by the name of Joyce Bryant. And Joyce Bryant was known as the Black Marilyn Monroe. She was one of the first African-American sex symbols in the U.S. And Zelda Valdez created her sexy image, you know, and she was very popular, and she's still alive today, actually. But she was known as the Black Marilyn Monroe, you know, back during her heyday. In the 1950s, she moved her shop, Shea Zelda, to Midtown Manhattan. And she had a staff of 9 dressmakers and charged almost $1,000 per couture gown. So back in the 50s, she was charging $1,000 per gown. So you know that what she was doing was high end. Her role in glamorizing women caught the attention of Playboy's Hugh Hefner. And he commissioned her to design bunny costumes for the Playboy Playmates. And she created the original Playboy bunny costume, which was presented at the opening of the first Playboy Club in Chicago, Illinois, on February 29th, 1960. It was actually the first commercial uniform that was registered by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Now, by the 1960s, Zelda Valdez directed the fashion and design workshop of the Harlem Youth Opportunities Unlimited and Associated Community Teams. She taught costume design skills and facilitated fabric donations to the students' workshops. She was also one of the founders of the National Association of Fashion Accessory Designers, an industry group that its intent was to promote Black design professionals. And the group was established with the sponsorship of the National Council of Negro Women. In 1970, she was asked to design costumes for the Dance Theater of Harlem by Arthur Mitchell, who ran the Dance Theater of Harlem. And by 1992, she would design costumes for 82 productions. And even though she closed her own business in 1989, she still continued to work with the Dance Theater of Harlem until her death in 2001 at the age of 97. So she lived a good long life. She was successful in business, and she was able to do it on her own terms, built her own business from the ground up, where she was rubbing elbows with celebrities and famous people who were, you know, celebrities and people and titans in business. And, you know, she really did, you know, make her own way. And that's the example that we look to. You know, when we think of our own successes, building up our own successes, individual, you know, as a people, you know, people like Zelda Wynn and Valdez are the example that despite any hardships you might have in life, especially dealing with, you know, gender or race, you can, you know, create your own way. And, you know, not to say everyone's going to be, you know, like her, where you're rubbing elbows with celebrities, whether you want to or not. But we can create our own way. And she's an example of that perseverance. So Zelda Wynn Valdez, we salute you for your contribution to Black history and Black culture, and just for being an example for Black men and women. Now, the second woman we're going to highlight today, is a woman by the name of Dr. Sarah Logan Frazier. And she was an American physician and pediatrician. And as mentioned, she was the fourth female African-American physician in the U.S. And she was the first female doctor who was able to practice medicine in the Dominican Republic. Now, Sarah Frazier was born January 20th, 1850. And she was the daughter of Germaine Wesley Logan, who was a noted abolitionist who had escaped slavery, and his wife Caroline. She was born the fifth of eight children at her family home in Syracuse. And her home in Syracuse was an important stopping point on the Underground Railroad, where they gave shelter to approximately 1,500 escaped slaves as they traveled to Canada. Now, you can imagine growing up in a house like that. You know, when you see all that as a young person and you're a part of something like that and it's in your family, it can have a profound effect on you as an individual. And that also allowed her to gain experience in treating the injuries and illnesses that people suffered as a result of their slavery or escape. And so she decided to become a physician as a young girl, you know, due to her experiences with, you know, helping treat slaves, as well as she told the story of when she was a young girl seeing a young boy pinned beneath a wagon and not being able to really do anything to help him like she wanted to. And she stated, "I will never see a human being in need of aid again and not be able to help." She was supported in her career by her family physician, whom she shadowed for 5 months. So she was able to get that, you know, early education by watching him and by seeing him work. And the family physician, Dr. Michael D. Benedict, would be her instructor in some of her medical courses later on. She was admitted to Syracuse University School of Medicine at age 23. And her 1873 enrollment in medical school was celebrated by a local Syracuse newspaper, which wrote that this is women's rights in the right direction. And we cordially wish the estimable young lady every success in the pursuit of the profession of her choice. So it was a big deal to have, you know, a woman, especially a Black woman, to get accepted to Syracuse University's School of Medicine. And this is in 1873. Wow. Now, in 1876, she became the first woman to gain an MD from the Syracuse University School of Medicine. And she is believed to be only the fourth African-American woman to become a licensed physician in the U.S. At the time. And she was known to be the second in New York to be licensed and the first to graduate from a co-ed medical school. By the fall of that same year, 1876, she began interning in pediatrics and obstetrics at the Women's Hospital of Philadelphia. Then, you know, continued on to the New England Hospital for Women and Children to complete her internship by 1878. Now, the second hospital, the New England Hospital, was unique in its use of an all-woman staffing. And it was here that she gained a passion for obstetrics and midwifery. Midwives helped to birth babies. And while she was at the Women's Hospital of Philadelphia, she reportedly conducted an experiment where she gave agitated patients soft pastel-colored yarn to knit with, because she remembered how it had a calming effect on her when she was going through medical school. And so these trials had a remarkable calming effect on the patients. And it is thought that, you know, this experiment that she conducted was an early example of usage of the psychology of color in a hospital setting. Now, even throughout her education, you know, Sarah was an attractive woman, so she didn't have any shortage of suitors who was coming after her, trying to get her, trying to get her attention. She was even, you know, courted by white classmates when she was in medical school. One of them even offered, you know, to marry or propose to her, rather, and tell her that he loved her and that he could help her professionally in her career. But she declined the offer. But she actually married Dr. Charles Frazier, and she was actually encouraged by Frederick Douglass, who arranged their initial meeting. They got married in 1882, and they soon moved to his home in Puerto Plata in Dominican Republic. They had one daughter, Georgia, Gregoria, excuse me. Unfortunately, while she was giving birth to her daughter, she had some complications that were sustained during childbirth, which resulted in her not being able to carry any more children. But it was through her marriage to Dr. Charles Frazier, which brought her to the Dominican Republic and allowed her to be able to practice medicine there, which we will get to in a moment. But in 1879, she opened up her own private practice in Washington, D.C. And she lived in D.C. with her sister Amelia and Amelia's husband, Louis Douglas, which is the son of Frederick Douglass. And it was here that she first gained her nickname, Miss Doc, which was affectionately referred to as her by her patients and by everyone who knew her. By 1884, she was granted a special license, which allowed her to become the first woman authorized to practice medicine in Dominican Republic. But she was only able to treat women and children due to the fact that she was a woman. And since her family, they owned a drug store that did very well, and since they owned this drug store and it did well financially for them, she was actually able to offer free treatment to the poor, which no doubt was extremely beneficial. There are many parts in the Dominican Republic that are poor, especially during these times. So no doubt her work was very, very extremely helpful and appreciated by all those who benefited from it. Unfortunately, her husband died in 1894 due to a stroke. She ended her practice and began to spend full time running the family pharmacy, and which was popular in the neighborhood. It was a popular neighborhood spot. But she closed the pharmacy in 1896 and used the profits to move herself and her daughter back to Washington, D.C. In early 1897. She ended up putting her daughter in boarding schools in France because she was unsatisfied with the racism in American education systems. So she actually traveled to France quite often during these times, traveling with her daughter since she was in school out there. But by 1907, she began practicing pediatric medicine again in her home in Syracuse, New York. And she mentored Black midwives. And she had a unique position with the fact that she was had a university education as a physician and a midwife. And that allowed her to impact underserved populations. And, this was her main interest in getting into medicine in the first place. She even wrote in her own private journals, to have those of my race come to me for aid and for me to be able to give it will be all the heaven that I want. So she was able to fulfill her dream of being able to help her own through her knowledge and through her skill. She ended up going back to work again following some financial difficulty in 1908. She worked as a resident physician at the Blue Plains Industrial School for Boys in Maryland, but quit due to discrimination and poor treatment. And she also worked at a women's clinic after moving to D.C., but quit due to racism from white women co-workers. It's a shame that someone so talented and who's given so much throughout her life and her career still had to deal with such things like that. But unfortunately, Dr. Sarah Frazier died in 1933. At the age of 83, and the Her legacy still lives on. Dominican Republic declared a 9-day period of national mourning with flags flown at half mast. A small park in Syracuse honors the Logan family, including a mural of the family, while the child care center at Upstate Medical University is named in her honor. And each year, Upstate also awards the Sarah Logan Frazier Scholarship to a first or second year medical student who demonstrates need and holds similar ideals to Dr. Sarah Logan Frazier, and that's Upstate Medical University. So, you know, even though many people may not know who she is, you know, she may not be a household name, but her legacy do live on because of her work. And in recent years, Upstate Medical University has celebrated the Sarah Logan Frazier Day in February, typically with a lecture and a luncheon as part of Black History Month. So, you know, her legacy does live on, and her work hasn't been forgotten by people. But, you know, at Everyday Black History, we're proud to, you know, honor her and talk about her work, because of the fact that she was able to help so many people. And that was the joy, that was what she wanted to always do, and that gave her joy, being able to do that. So Dr. Sarah Logan Frazier, we thank you for your contribution to Black history, and we salute you. And that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. We just wanted to come and just, you know, talk about a little history. As I always say, there's so much of our history that's so rich. We've accomplished so much and contributed so much, and many times it's forgotten or unknown. So it's always a pleasure to just be able to talk about these things and bring some of these people to light. So we'll be coming at you again next week with more Black history. So enjoy the rest of your week, enjoy your weekend, and stay tuned for the next episode.